hope. Gotta give him hope.
Tear down walls of ignorance and narrow-mindedness, for nothing has to stay as it is.
We live in an interdependent world, which is bound together to a common destiny.
And I know in my heart that man is good, that what is right will always eventually triumph.
When will we, as world leaders across the world, address the pressing issues that are truly causing our people angst and worry?
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to Apolitical Hope, the podcast exploring how to get courageous, trusted, and ethical political leaders we need for the 21st century. My name is Lisa, and I'm the CEO of the Foundation. In today's episode, my colleague Rebecca Eisen is talking to Tunisia's former Prime Minister, Mehdi Joma. Mr. Joma was working in aeronautics when he was asked to become a politician for the first time following the Arab uprising. After months of political crisis, he was appointed acting prime minister in 2014 and tasked, a tough task, I may say, with transitioning the country to democracy. That meant organizing the first free and fair legislative elections since 1956 and leaving the top job as a result.
Even the team, the first meeting, I tell them, you have to prepare your exit today.
We wanted to talk to Mr. Joma because his unusual prime ministership in a brand new democracy has a lot to teach us about how to get new, different, and prepared people into politics. In this interview, he talks about the need for politicians to be prepared, exactly that, something that was lacking post-Tunisian revolution, the importance of an overarching political vision, and the skills he thinks politicians need today. He also calls on young people to claim their spot in politics and has some advice for protesters calling for big political change around the world.
My recommendation, it's the right to protest, to refuse the situation when it's not acceptable, but try not to destroy everything.
This episode was produced at the 2022 Athens Democracy Forum in partnership with the Democracy and Culture Foundation. Mr. Joma is now a member of the Club de Madrid, the world's largest forum of democratic former presidents and prime ministers who leveraged their experience and reach to strengthen inclusive democratic practice and improve the well-being of people around the world. Enjoy.
Okay, let's start. The reason why I thought it was very interesting to speak to you for our podcast is that our foundation is trying to get new, different, and prepared politicians into politics to serve for democracy, for the better of democracy. And I think that you have a very interesting perspective because you came to power and politics at a time where there was kind of a whole new set of politicians. These were people mostly who had never been politicians before, right?
Yes, right.
Yeah.
So maybe I have a family background of politics and I live in this atmosphere. But my decision when I was young is never touch to politics, never be involved. I was more seeking for a professional career. And that's what happened. So I was living in Europe for a long time. I made all my career traveling between Europe, United States, China. I was in a completely different field. I was in the aerospace industry, which is a very competitive and worldwide industry. There I learned a lot. I made a good career and I got a comfortable professional career. Then happened what happened, you know, in Tunisia, this big change with the Arabic Spring, which started in Tunisia. And there was a lot of events, a lot of changes. And I was contacted to join the government after the first assassination, political assassination and the trouble. There was a pressure to include some neutral and competences in the government. To be honest with you, I declined it because I don't have a good idea about politics. It's the rules and the way they are running politics and the behavior of people is like dirty for me. It was really dirty. And I'm a worldwide professional, so I like the rules. I like things which are clear and the rules of competition are clear, which is not the idea I got from politics. But after I accepted because I think that it's an obligation for us, you know, and my obligation is to serve the country as well. So I took 1 year and I considered it like a military mission. Mm. And the other thing that in my professional career, it was made by crisis management and the country was in crisis. I have this obligation to serve my country. I like Tunisia. Really, I like Tunisia. It's very, 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 very nice country. So I decided to go back. And after there was another big trouble, which was the second assassination, political assassination. And everything was stuck. We stopped in Tunisia, big conflict, big trouble. And there was a dialogue and there was a design that I was selected as the prime minister to lead the transition, to organize the elections, and as well to face this wave of terrorism and insecurity. So it was really, by the beginning, something that I did not think about and that I declined. But after, it was like an obligation to the country. And you know, I was not coming from any party or any political field. So I decided to focus all the work to succeed the mission on the team. No one was betting on our success at that time. Mm-hmm. And I think that the most important realization, whatever it's happening today, is that we succeeded to stop the insecurity problems, to offer a right environment, and to ensure at the deadline that we fixed to ourselves and agreed with all the public to organize fair and recognized for the first time an independent election, even though today things are not so good at not our aspiration, at the level of the aspiration. Anyhow, it's in our memory, it's in our legacy, and it will serve us for the future of the country, and it will serve us to succeed with this new democracy.
Mm. Yeah, I want to talk about, I mean, there's a lot there I want to talk about, but just to give some background, so you were chosen to be the acting prime minister as a transition in 2014. That year, there was a new constitution, and the motto of that constitution for the Tunisian Republic was freedom, dignity, justice, and order. And now as we sit here today, you know, democracy in Tunisia, as with pretty much everywhere in the world, frankly, it seems to be under threat. So now that you know, it's been how long? 8 years. With the benefit of hindsight, do you see anything that the leaders of Tunisia at that time, when it was this brand new baby democracy, could have done differently to avoid a situation like now?
I think that we are speaking about 8 years, not 80 years. Let's say that we are on the learning curve today. I think the main thing for me in my analysis today, yes, we succeeded in putting a constitution, but we forget something which is important, and that's the lesson. Whatever the text, whatever the quality of the text of the constitution, whatever the institution you know, you need the right leadership to lead that. Mm. It's like in a plane. Mm. You need a pilot,
right,
skilled, with the quality and the skills, mm, and the competences of a pilot. For all the democracies, we see, even in the mature democracy, when you have a leadership who is not believing, who is behaving differently, who is not really prepared to lead this democracy, we have some threats. You imagine in a nascent democracy, it's important, the quality of the leadership. And when you organize the elections, and in the mind of, I'm discussing with my colleagues from Europe and US sometimes as well, in their mind, when we organize election, when we have elected the institution, the problem is solved and we have democracy. No, it's necessary, but it's not enough. Now, really, the deep work that we have to do is how to prepare this leadership with the right competences, with the conviction, with the behavior, democratic behavior as well. Because some of them, and I see it in Tunisia, in their rights, in their speech, they are democratic, no doubt. But in their behavior, no, they are not democratic. And the other thing, okay, you are elected, you have institution, you have to lead this institution to the success. Because what is the aim of democracy at the end? It's the citizen. Mm-hmm. And the problem and the big trouble that we have in Tunisia today, the expectation was high. Expectation was high. And people today, we did not give them any dividend of this democracy. Mm-hmm. No prosperity, no perspective for the future. And they are like disgusted from this democracy. And that's the real threat.
Are they disgusted by the way that the new democratic leaders are acting, or do they not see the benefits as far as equality or freedom?
No, they are disgusted more by the quality of the leaders, because what we see, and I was surprised really, I'm discovering, you win the election, Because you are a good speaker. Yeah. You know, I spent 2 years elaborating a vision. Before I leave in 2015, we elaborate with the team a vision for the country and a set of reforms, which was necessary for the country to give the means of the democracy. You have to reform, you have to succeed economically, you have to succeed socially. That's the means of the democracy. And we continue to work on that. I spend all my time explaining the vision, explaining what we have to do, explaining the perspectives, explaining the geopolitics, explaining the environment, the set of reforms that we have. And I see on the other side who succeeded in the election, who were promising without any foundation. You promise everything. So anyone who wants to involve himself in the public life, in the elections, and to get a responsibility, he has to be aware that it's a responsibility and to have clear things, no vision, no programs, no idea, no competences. Even though you are elected by a fair way, the result is not good for the country, is not good for the people, and is not good for the democracy.
Mm, it's really interesting because I feel like you're saying a lot of things, even the same language that our foundation is trying to say, even the language around prepared politicians. This is exactly what we're trying to say. I have a question, and that is then, you know, I look around the world, it looks like there's going to potentially be places that find themselves in similar situations as Tunisia did in 2014, where there's a replacement of leadership. So when you have a whole new replacement of leadership, how can you have politicians that are prepared? What do they look like? Does there need to be an infrastructure, which is what we're trying to do, that's like having a pipeline of politicians? It almost seems like impossible to have a whole new leadership that is also prepared.
Yeah. So first, I think it's a responsibility. Myself, I believe that there is no solution without the involvement of the young people. We are speaking about the future. And such, when we speak about democracy or change the country, it's not a question of months. It's a long term. It's not, you cannot do it like because you agreed on a text, on a nice text. No, it's a long term. It goes through the education, but the only chance for the democracy and mainly for the nascent democracy is to see these young people involved. And the problem of young people, like I told you, that this political landscape is, excuse me, the word, dirty. Mm. The right people that we need for the country, this honest, working hard, open mind. They don't like such atmosphere. And I faced that. Really, I faced that. It was not so easy to hire and to recruit ministers, the best one. I told them, you know, we have a very difficult mission. No one is betting on us, on the success of the mission. But you have to do. The crisis is, and the threats are very high. And I want to be clear with you. If you succeed, you will be insulted. Mm. If you fail, you will be judged. So young people should be aware of that, but it's their obligation. It's their country. If they don't go through this to make it cleaner, there is no chance to expect any change. The only way to change is to be involved. Expecting from the existing leadership to open the doors and to these people, it's a dream.
Another way that your prime ministership was unusual, I think, is that you were overseeing this transition to free and fair elections for the first time since 1956.
Yes, yes.
But that means, by doing so, that meant that you would ultimately give up your prime ministership. And that's very unusual for a leader, obviously. So as a foundation, we're interested in exploring how to get leaders that are willing to be reformers, even if it means that it might not be politically good for them. So how do we find those people? Personally, how did you deal with this tension personally between reforms and your political title? And how did you keep your pride in check?
Yeah, I will tell you, for me, it was easier than, because for politicians, they work all their life to get the position. Mm. I'm coming from another world. I'm coming from the industry, from international career, and where we are used with missions. And in your mind, you have to succeed the mission as soon as possible. That's why we said 1 year. That's the first thing. The second, even the team, the first meeting, I tell them, you have to prepare your exit today, to think about that today. That's why, and we agreed all together that we are here for a mission, but the state will continue. My mind is like that. We are in a mission. We work for a country. It's a continuous. I'm responsible for a set, for a mission, for a step.
Okay, so you've credited Tunisian's strong notion of the state as one of the reasons for it being like the success story of the Arab Spring at the time. So you said that Tunisia replaced the regime and shook the state, but it did not break the state. And around the world, we see people hitting the streets in frustration, and some people are calling for a revolution. Do you still think that shaking but not breaking the state was the right way to go?
Yes, because in the case of Tunisia, each time I'm used to be asked why it succeeded at that time in Tunisia and not in the other Arab Springs. Why? Because we have traditions. You know, the first constitution, it's not the one voted in 2014. No, the first constitution, it was around 1850. So we have a big tradition with constitution, with institution, and we have a big tradition with the state, which is important. And that's why my recommendation, yeah, it's the right to protest, to refuse the situation when it's not acceptable, but try not to destroy everything, to preserve the pillars that you can rebuild something which is more robust. All the ingredients of the state were there, just to reorganize, to improve, and to make them more performant.
You've talked about that we need prepared leaders, but what specific traits, specific characteristics should we be looking for in people that we are trying to help become emerging leaders?
Yeah. So let's begin by the mission of these people, if they are involved, if they succeed, if they are elected and in the mission. Is really to manage a country. It's not only a question of opinion. It's different. It's not a question of winning in a debate. It's not a question only winning election. You need to do that. But the people should think about the target. The target is to improve the life of the citizen, is to improve the position of the state. That's the first thing. So this kind of people, they are open. They know the world as well. It's important to know the country, to know the people, but it's not enough. You have to know your people, their expectation, their mind, how to communicate with them, how to explain to them, how to share with them, but as well, and it's important, they know the world, they know the future, they know technologies, they know all these changes, the climate change, the technology, the problem that I see in Tunisia, all of that is absent.
What I'm also hearing you saying, as far as your approach, is that they need to be good people managers, essentially.
Yes.
They need to be like a good boss.
Yes. You know, you have to manage problems, difficulties. You have to manage people. You have to manage teams. You have to manage organization. It's a knowledge. You know, I remember when I was selected as prime minister, I got a discussion with Madame Christine Lagarde. She was the head of Monetary Fund, International Monetary Fund. And she's coming from the corporate as well before. And we were discussing and I explained to her what is my intention to do to manage the country. And she told me, I will tell you something. You will succeed because what we learn in the corporate, our reflexes, our tools, our way to manage, it's more performant. In the preparation of the leaders, the new leaders, I know that there is a big preparation, how to debate, how to communicate. It's not enough. That's the way, but we have to prepare them how to manage problems, how to manage crisis, how to motivate. And the most important thing, how to choose people. I consider myself that I did not succeed, but the team succeeded. My only success is how to choose the team. And I will tell you something, and it's really a recommendation of all the people who are listening. In my life, professional life, and even in the public life, I learned something. I cannot hire or work with any collaborator, with any minister, with any responsible, if I don't feel that he's better than me in his field.
Right. Yeah. That's good advice. All right. We're running out of time. So I'm going to ask you the questions that I ask everyone on this podcast. And the first is, what three main takeaways do you want to leave the audience with?
It's important to be, whatever your career, whatever your position, it's important to pay attention to the country, to pay attention to politics, and to be involved. At least to be involved, to understand all the people and to choose the right one. But when you feel more responsible, to be involved, to be a force of change. Mm-hmm. And the question of politics, it's not for politicians. And this passive position saying that one is good, that one is bad, it's comfortable for you, but not for the country. If you are a group, if you are many, you will succeed. And we need this open mind people. By the end, at the end, what is important is to fit your responsibility, is really to have a clear target, clear vision. And each time, don't think only about how to answer the immediate or the short-term solution. You have to think about the long-term, and each decision you have to make for today, think about the impact for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. If you do that, normally it's the biggest service that we can give to the collectivity and to the country.
Mm. Thanks so much. What are you reading at the moment that we should also read, or recently?
You'll be surprised. I'm reading a book that I read when I was young.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's from the one of the famous books in the Arabic literature, which name is Khalil Awadumna. I found the traduction in English. They call it Fables of Bidpai. I don't know why, but Khalil Awadumna, which is telling the story of three Indian princes. Through the story, you have a lot of ethics about politics, about... You will be surprised. It's from the Abbasid period. It's around the century, the 13th century, 1220 or something, or 22 or something like that. It's really, you'll be surprised at how it's describing what we are living.
Mm. And this is our final question. What is giving you political hope?
First, for my country. I think, you know, I branded Tunisia like a startup democracy. Mm-hmm. My hope that it's still a startup. And we know that startups, it's a league, many troubles. Mm-hmm. It's not so easy. But I know that we will succeed at the end. And what is giving me hope that the leverage of this startup democracy will be not only for Tunisians, but for all the young people all around us. And I know the potential of that area. Today we are speaking about threats, but I see behind the threats all the opportunities.
Great. It has been so nice to speak to you. Thanks so much. I hope you enjoyed the
Thank you very
process.
Much.
And that was our discussion with Tunisia's former acting prime minister, Mehdi Joma. Thank you for listening and daring to hope. Apolitical Hope is a podcast from the Apolitical Foundation, and we'll be back with more from changemakers helping politicians to serve people and the planet in the coming weeks. You can help us shift the discussion on what's possible in politics by sharing this episode with your friends and tagging us on social media. You'll find us on Twitter at @ApoliticalFound, Facebook and Instagram at @ApoliticalFoundation, all one word, and on LinkedIn at @ApoliticalFoundation, two words. It'd also be a huge help if you could rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get this podcast. Last but definitely not least, we have a really great weekly briefing full of resources, tips, and jobs for people to want to build better politics. I call it the antidote to pessimism. You can subscribe to that in the show notes. It's a great way to join our network and keep up to date with the work that we do. And we want to hear from you too. I'm sure there are things that we're missing and ways to make the show better. We're always open to new ideas. Much love. Gratitude, health and safety, and hope for me and the entire Apolitical Foundation team. Mm-hmm.